Right, I'll introduce myself. I'm the Tony Kenny's my name. I'm the IT manager in Bournemouth Hospital. And what I want to talk to you about this morning is about the experience which we've had in the hospital using open source. Now, that's really the structure of what I've got to say. And I suppose I have to say also that when I look through the audience, I was here yesterday morning for Alan Kay's presentation, and the audience looked like they were my children. At least they were the same age as my children. So at least this morning's audience reflects a more suitable age profile. So maybe you can relate better to what I'm actually talking about. What I want to talk about is a little bit of background. This is really an IT conference. And in terms of just setting the scene, just to let you know a little bit about the hospital itself, but before we actually get into that, Deloitte & Touche, the management consultancy firm, were hired by the Health Board, by the Department of Health, to do what they called a value for money study. And amongst lots of things, they commented on the IT infrastructure in the Irish health system. Now, this is highly topical because this report has just come to public fruition with announcements that have been made yesterday, and today you'll see them in the headlines in the paper. So what I'm talking about is very current in terms of policy. That's what Deloitte & Touche said about the IT infrastructure in the health service, that it was underfunded, that it was fragmented, and that perhaps most interestingly, that much of what was actually done was done without any involvement of the user community, which I think is a telling comment. The budget for IT in health is 30 million euro, and the figure I use there, which I think is actually slightly low, it's 8.7 billion is what we spend. Health as a service in Ireland has been underfunded for many, many years. But in the last 3 years, we have finally caught up with the European averages, which is basically around 8% of GDP. And so for the last 3 years, we've actually managed to keep track with European averages. But you can see that the IT component of the health spend is way below that. It is 0.3%. So it's really infinitesimal. And that is partly the context for why Deloitte & Touche were able to make some of those observations. We spent so little that in many respects it almost didn't matter because it was so small that it couldn't really make any substantive difference. But there has been some developments in an attempt to approach this on a more rational basis. And the health service has signed contracts largely with SAP, the big German software house, to provide both financial and personnel systems on what they consider to be a national basis. And that initiative started about 1997. So I guess people in the health service recognized that this wasn't perhaps the best way to approach things and have begun to try and change it. That's just the background. The other piece of background is that in 2001, the government published a health strategy. And it was quite a brave document because they set targets for themselves. And these are the IT relevant sections. Now you could read inferences into it. They were published at the back of the strategy. And that could just be the way the printer set it out, or it may actually be some kind of deep psychological statement about what the guys who wrote the strategy thought of IT overall. But in any event, you can see down there, these were the target dates that they set, and an X indicates that they actually haven't been achieved, and a tick indicates, I don't think there's any ticks there, but they have been achieved. But that's the sort of background that we're working to. The other piece of background, which I'd just like to spend a minute or two on, because this is a technology conference, and I think there's a tendency in a technology conference to see things through technology tunnel vision. And really, if IT is to fulfill its real potential, I think it really needs to recognize that its role is to support, not to dominate. And sometimes I think people who come from our particular sphere see it the other way around, as if IT was the key enabler. I don't actually think it is, and some of the experience I've had in Bournemouth Hospital, which I'm still recovering from, is where I've made attempts to wander, to change that paradigm and get in there and tell them this is the way it should be done and this is how IT will actually show you how to do it. That strategy is fairly painful for those we try to execute it, and perhaps even more painful for those whom it's executed upon. Now, this is my view of how IT fits in an organization, because organizations are fundamentally about how meaning is created. So this, what's this got to do with open source? Nothing. Except I think it has something to do with it as we come along. If you look at the way the world that individuals and organizations work, we've got this barrier, which is how groups of people see the outside world, and they see it through filters. And health service, or any other organization for that matter, is no different. There's a lot of dialogue that goes on within organizations, which leads to this whole process here about capturing meaning and information, and what do we want to know and what we want to capture and so forth. And that is assembled into what we think is meaningful, which leads to some sort of purposeful action. And ultimately, we have an IT foundation that helps us to do that. Now, you might say, so what? But I think it nonetheless sets the philosophical context for IT, because I see IT very much as the foundation on which a lot of this other stuff is built, not the apex or the superstructure. And finally, there's one last comment before I leave this academic research stuff. And this is from a book written by Rittel and Weber. And I think these are wonderful characterizations. Tame problems and wicked problems. And in health, we are very much in the wicked problem segment. There are no simple solutions. There are no 100% right answers. All we are attempting to do is to improve some of the characteristics of the world for the people that live there. Okay, now my idea is about how IT can actually make that improvement. And so if you look at the starting point of an ICT architecture for health, it has to start with the client or the patient. That patient in Ireland, government policy is that in an IT context, patients and citizens will be able to access government services through this thing called the Reach Broker, which is a broker technology that enables a person to be connected to the service providers at the back end. Beneath that, I think there's a requirement for something which I've just called the patient portal. That's a place where patients can go to find health-specific information, just general information. If you're a diabetic, if you've got high blood pressure, if you've got cancer, all of the sort of things that we know that the internet is actually used extensively for today. I think a piece of research is done show that something like 20% of the hits on the internet are health related. People trying to find information out about general health conditions. Beneath that, I think there's a piece of infrastructure required which enables a person, as opposed to a generic inquiry, to actually, if they so choose, maintain information about their own health status. This is a kind of a logbook, if you like to think of it like that. Our renal service, for example, for many years, when you come to us as a renal patient, they give you a little logbook so that you can record in it details of your various blood tests, your input-output balances, etc. This is simply an electronic version of the same. There's also a requirement. We talk about seamless care, joined up writing in government. Well, one of the problems with joined up writing in government is the enormous gaps that exist between one service provision and the next. And very often it's the patient who falls down between the cracks. This artifact is really designed to make sure that if you've been treated in an acute hospital and you're discharged to your general practitioner's care, that the general practitioner really knows about it, and that the community nurses who are maybe involved in your care also know about it, and they don't find out by accident by meeting you on the street or whatever. And then we come to the parts of the architecture that probably are what we think of in terms of the actual service providers. And there's lots of them. There's general practitioners, there's community care, there's intellectual disability, and lots more. I just couldn't fit them all on the slide. And then we have the sort of thing that I referred to earlier, corporate services, finance, service planning, payroll, rostering, all of that stuff. And finally, you've got these highly specialized services like the blood bank service and so forth that any health service needs to actually function. And this is my view of the IT landscape in health. It's an attempt to say what we require. And I'm not just simply talking about it from the Bowman Hospital perspective, but really from a national perspective. And why am I doing that? Because in a minute I'm going to show you where open source solutions can actually make a very positive contribution to that. But unless we've got the blueprint, we don't actually know how the pieces all fit together. There's two final pieces up here. There's an infrastructure which is required, which is really where standards come into it. This bit on this box on this side. And I'm not going to go through each of those attributes now, but you can see that unless we have standards and unless those standards are actually defined and so that a patient is a patient and a disease is a disease and so forth, the whole system is not actually going to function. And on the other side, we need to have these infrastructural type services like patient identification and so on and so forth. And I'll talk briefly about those later. I just briefly touch on this because this is really probably only of interest to people who work in the field. Health is very lucky. We know that the internet's been based on open standards. But what I'm talking about now is the step down from the technology standards to actually business definitional standards. And these are some of the business definitional standards that health has, that they can avail of. HL7 comes from America. ENV 13606 comes from the European Union. They are almost complementary, and they are gradually converging. And we're fortunate because many industry bodies, like the motor industry and so forth, that are actually further ahead in the implementation of this stuff, had to actually do all that from scratch. As an industry, we're able to rely on this. The last bit, I wasn't able to find any standards for implementation, and as everybody knows in IT, the devil's in the details. The reason I put those bits up there are that each one of them represents an opportunity for something to go wrong. And I'm sure any of you who've actually worked through an implementation project knows that. And when two or three of them combine together, that's when you get really good fun. And I suppose if you're really lucky, all six will go, or all seven will go against you. Okay, now, where in that picture that I put up can IT, or can open source, actually make a contribution? Well, let's take a couple of specifics. I believe that it can make a contribution particularly in the service provider end of the acute hospital sector. Sorry, I need to go back. All right. Well, I flipped up one there. Rather than going back, I'll just tell you about it. In the open source sector in healthcare, there is the most enormous open source project, which has been developed in the United States in the federal in the Veterans Administration. It goes by the name of Vista. And you know the way software can be characterized as being vaporware and so on and so forth. This particular product I've seen characterized as whaleware. It is so enormous. They've been working on it for 22 years. And it covers, the range of applications which it covers is simply breathtaking. Now, we don't have it in Bowman Hospital just yet because we haven't done a proper evaluation on it. But it's on our current work plan. And we are looking at this. And what's really interesting, would anybody like to guess how much this application actually costs to acquire? Can you just give me a figure? It's an open source product, but there is an acquisition cost to it. It's just simply, no, it's for the product itself. All right, we'll end the suspense. It costs $70, right? I'll give you some figures later, which gives you a comparable breakdown of what a closed source solution costs. This one is really interesting. Now, we flipped through it very quickly, and in fact, what it is a financial application. And the point I'm making here is that open source is moving from the infrastructure level, where it's providing your mail server or your web server or whatever it is, into frontline business. My financial controller doesn't give a damn how his mail works. Now, when I tried to take Excel off his desktop, he got a bit upset for a while. But he really couldn't care less about how the mail service works or what web browser we use or whatever. It just these are just things they expect to function, much the same way as you expect the light to work when you switch it on at home. But open source is now, I think, moving into a different sphere. And that sphere is where it's providing solid business functional solutions. This product here is called Compierre, and it is a fully functional financial application. We've got it downloaded and we're evaluating it at the moment. And based on what I've seen of it, and based on what our financial controller has seen of it, it looks to me like we will actually be changing to that as of the year end. Accountants will never change mid-year. There's something really significant about the fact that they have to finish out the year on the same software. But it looks to me at this point as if we're going to move to that. Now, again, this is an open source product. It's freely downloadable. That doesn't actually mean to say it's free, because support on it, if you buy support from the provider, it costs you €10,000 a year, or $10,000, I can't remember. But we are currently spending more than that on support for the existing financial application which we have. So the point, question? No, we didn't look at a whole load of stuff. We recently, about 2 years ago, in the context of Y2K, we did actually have a look at other proprietary products. We didn't really go back and you know, re-examine the marketplace. But the reason why we've looked at this one is because of its depth of functionality. It's an extremely functional product, entirely written in Java, runs against Postgres or Oracle, and what's really interesting is it has an implicit workflow in the product itself, which you get only in the very top-line products. Right, okay, and well, that's good to know. We actually haven't looked at that one, but we certainly... Right, okay, well, we'll have a look at that, you know, because, and again, I think that really proves the point that I'm making, that open source is moving out of the infrastructure, which I suppose characterize as the basement. You know, who gives a damn what goes on in the basement? It's actually moving out into the business area, and I've given you two examples of that, both on the hospital system and in this one, and this other gentleman here has identified the third one. Payroll, rostering. The health service is a hugely people-intensive business. Beaumont itself, for the last 18 months or so, has been working to create a rostering application. We have an open source policy. So when this product is fully deployed, it's actually on two wards in user acceptance test at the moment, and when it's fully deployed, we will open source that to any members of the community who would like to take it. It's probably really only of interest in a health context because it handles all of the health-specific things like agency nurses and so on and so forth that a health environment requires. But I'm sure there's other agencies and organizations that have analogous rostering requirements. And just on that, the reason I'm talking about open source in Beaumont's context is that for the past 2 years, we've had a very active policy of releasing our software to anybody who wants it. And to date, some of our applications are running in Tala. There's an application running in the Blood Bank. This application will be running in St. Vincent's and in Tala later in the year. Now, why is it not doing that now? Because I have to be sure that it's rock solid before it actually goes out the door. I mean, it's okay for me to mess up one of my own wards if the system crashes. It's probably not quite so acceptable if I do the same on Vincent's. They mightn't be so forgiving. So later this year, when we're utterly sure that it's actually fully functional and has passed all its user acceptance tests, those other organizations are in line to take it. We've also had inquiries about it from UK-based organizations. Now, I'm just quickly running through some of the desktop stuff, the infrastructure stuff that you've heard about in the conference and I'm assuming you're all familiar with. We've switched all our desktops to Star Office. Let's see, what else have we got? This is a tool which I'm literally evaluating at the moment. You remember I talked about the individual patient logbook. This is called Torch. It's fully open source and it's really designed for an individual to maintain their own health records. What else have we got? Obviously that's Mozilla and there's no big deal about that. Okay, and there's other products there that I haven't shown because there's no point in just putting them up simply to show them. But I think those of you with a technical background are well aware of the richness of the open source community at the infrastructure support level. Now, I suppose the real question is, from a business point of view, why would anybody bother doing this? Because it's not a simple change. I had the privilege yesterday of hearing Alan Kay speak, and he gave a wonderful metaphor. He said Gutenberg invented printing in, 1458? And as soon as he had actually delivered this miracle, what was the first thing he did? He hired hand illuminators to draw on the pages, hand-drawn pictures, because that was how books were presented in the marketplace, if you like, up to that point. So people would not accept the idea that this printed thing was a book unless it was actually a hand-illuminated manuscript. It took 250 years for the idea of a book, as we know it today, to become generalized and accepted. And if you think about it, am I getting a message? Which is? It's noon. I'm only halfway through. I started a bit late, so I run very rapidly through this. I need another five. Okay, why bother? The real reason why we bother is because it provides us with a really radically different approach to the way engineering is actually done. That's the classic model, and this is the open source model, because it enables us, because we are taking the commercial aspect out of it, to consider all of these other dimensions. And because it also, I think, does this final point here, it changes the balance, it alters the power balance. If at the end of the day, you know that the software that you're getting is going back into the community, as opposed to knowing that you're dependent on a provider to supply this to you, I think it radically alters the power balance. And I was interested in the earlier speech this morning where they talked about democratizing and altering access. And I think that's what it does in our context also. And anybody who's had to deal with commercial proprietary vendors where they and only they could say, this is what we can do, will know about that experience. It's not all that interesting. This is how long it's taken us to create that Java application. It was a steep learning curve. I think you can see that from the diagram. I've really made that point. It really does alter the balance, because providers no longer hold 49 of the 52 cards. Once you paid your money, you've effectively handed over all control of what happens subsequently until it comes time for you to pay some more money, which happens a lot. One of the great things about open source is the community aspect of it. This is an extract from my own email account, and you can see Hard Hats is the name of the organization that supports Vista. And every day I get about 10 messages. So this is a really vibrant and active community. And that, I think, is really the epitome of what the open source movement can do. I'm just putting this up for information. This is the cost of another organization who are considering at the present moment a closed source hospital information system. And that's based on the only available information that I could get from them, which did not include the cost of hardware, did not include the cost of implementation, etc. That is the cost of us implementing Vista. There's two columns. One is, the first one is based on 1,000 concurrent users. So for comparative purposes, I've calculated what it would cost to implement for 1,000 concurrent users. The second column is what we'll actually use, which would be about 560 concurrent users. You can see the difference, and that is fully costed. And you can see the difference coming out there on the bottom line. There's different options there, but one of the open source product actually requires what is still a proprietary MUMS license. But I didn't put it in that illustration. There's also an open source MUMS. So we've three scenarios there, and part of the evaluation is going to be to see how each cuts it. But, you know, to give it sort of, you know, worst case, I put in the full cost. All right. There's lots of risks. And there's always this point about, you know, I think Alan Kay's example yesterday is good. People are not going to rush and adopt open source immediately. A lot of people in our own community are watching what we're doing. And that's very practical. And they're going to learn from our mistakes and all of the rest of the stuff. And believe me, we'll make lots of them, so there'll be lots of learning. But that's a very practical approach, I think, for organizations to take. I think, just in conclusion, because I am over time, that I think open source really can make an enormous difference. I think it really requires a big change. And I think, on an earlier slide that I think that I skipped through, I characterized this as the difference between real work and make-up work. Because real work is about taking something like this and actually applying it. Make-up work is where you write contracts, you spend all your time negotiating and haggling, and you really are not actually focused on what your end users want. Which is going back to my earlier point about the role of IT in making meaning in an organization. And lastly, that's a quote from Havel, who's one of my heroes. And he is making the point that the world is not something to be seen as a machine, but rather to be worked with. So that concludes my presentation. Thank you. Sorry I ran late.